Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, dear.
Good evening, everybody. And we're having those board troubles once again. And what we're going to do is call Mommy back in to have her answer her phone and be with us. Oh, goodness.
Hello.
Are you there?
I am there, and I heard every word you said. I don't know what happened there.
Well, I've got little wheels that are spinning that are supposed to be working that are not. So,
all right.
let's just go ahead and to you.
Can the home audience hear me right now?
I think they can. I can. You're coming in loud and clear on this end.
Great. Then I'm going to do my opening again, which is bonjour, mes amis. Ça va bien. I hope we're all ça va bien-ing right now. We're getting a little bit of feedback. Darlings, Mummy is not coming to you from the revolving ballroom high atop the Chrysler Building in the Cafe Berlin. This week's episode, though live right now, 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and wherever you are, it's coming across the waves of Blog Talk Radio. This is Come Now, Don't Sulk, which is part of the wonderful Here Be Monsters radio family. And I am coming to you live, believe it or not, from La Crosse, Wisconsin. I am in the Charmont Hotel in the penthouse right now. It's not a revolving penthouse, although Mummy did have a little bit too much Prosecco. So I'm a little dizzy, but I am coming to you from the Charmont Hotel in La Crosse, Wisconsin. All my friends here in the wonderful cheese center of the world. Mummy is just within a few blocks of you if you're in La Crosse. I had a wonderful dinner tonight at Love Child. Oh my God, I'll tell you more about that later. I'm traveling the country on different jaunts and business trips right now. And so that's why I came to you from Minneapolis a few weeks ago and environments around there. And this is a wonderful, wonderful place. I must tell you that being on the fourth floor of the Charmont Hotel means that I tower over the rest of the city right now. It's like the song from Oklahoma. Everything is up to date in Kansas City. Their tallest building is four stories. The town is filled with ancient buildings from the 1800s, and they're doing everything they can to save them and reconfigure them and repurpose them. And I think that's so noble. So there's all sorts of cute restaurants and little antique shops and things. It's a very sweet town. And of course, the university is here. It's a bit of a ghost town because it is summer, so most of the students are gone. So it's a little bit quiet, but we're doing business here right now. And I will tell you more about that another time. Darlings, we're here with my wonderful producer, Gwendolyn Holden-Berry. Gwendolyn, how are you doing tonight?
A little bit of a nervous breakdown with puppies. I'm so sorry.
Well, I'm wondering, and we'll discuss this, I wonder if your nervous breakdown is linked at all to the blood moon eclipse which we're going to have. Is that causing some consternation? Well, I know it's causing me some constipation, but I wonder if it's causing you any consternation.
You could probably put a cross a T and dot an I on that one. And basically, blood moon is about facing all of that stuff from the past that we no longer need and ejecting it. That's it. Goodbye. Lesson learned. Moving along.
Well, I'm going to have to make, after the show tonight, I shall draw up a list of things that I need to say goodbye to. I'm a strange Aquarius in that respect. I have a tendency to hold on to things, and Aquarians are supposed to be very unsentimental about change. They're supposed to be very comfortable with change and moving on and leaving old apartments and homes and getting rid of possessions and stuff. And I'm afraid that I have a near nervous breakdown when any of the plants in my garden die in the fall. I'm almost disconsolate on that. And speaking of my garden, I'll address that in a few minutes too. For those of you just tuning in right now, we are live on Here Be Monsters Radio, on Blog Talk Radio, actually. This is part of the Here Be Monsters Network, of which Gwendolyn Holden Berry is the doyenne, the produciatrix of that, and she has invited me to create my own show here, Come Now, Don't Sulk, in which we address just about everything, but without sulking. I want to remind you that our sponsors include the DaughtersOfIsis.com people. Daughters of Isis, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. This is a fine line of products, essential oils, and all sorts of mind-expanding and spirit-expanding products. Do go, run, do not walk to DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. And I'm wondering, Gwendolyn, is there some product that we should perhaps be using or purchasing this week during the eclipse? Is there anything you could suggest? Is there a top one or two products that you think would be perfect for this transition we're about to go through?
Well, you know, it's funny you should ask that. I know the perfect one to suggest, that would be our Quantum Shift Mist, which is an essential oil blend based in some citrus with a bit of basil, a little bit of mugwort, but it's a top note of citrus. And what it does is it cleanses that auric field, brings new energy on, refreshes you, revives you. I think that's a good choice for this week.
Well, send me a bottle immediately, and I'd like the orphanage size, please. I don't want the jumbo. I want the one that's literally orphanage size. I want one big enough for 48 children without parents. So if it has to be UPS to me in a crate, please send it immediately and charge it to my account. I especially like the basil and citrus aspect of it. I wonder if it would do well on my homemade pasta. I'm tempted not only to wear it, but also to actually consume it systemically. I don't see why we shouldn't be able to eat essential oils if we can wear them. I think that we should be able to use them as douches if we must. I mean, something. I want to literally have my aura changed, not only externally, but from the inside out. And I think most of my listeners agree with that sort of thing. I would like to just cover a few things. A couple of you have been writing me messages. I want to remind you that we take phone calls here. We take phone calls, and the phone number in our studio is 323-784-9639. That's 323, those of you with Crayola crayons right now, 323-784-9639. We'll take calls during the night. Please, you know, call in. We're eager to speak to you. I would like to also tell you that we have been doing the Share the Love contest on Facebook. This is where you share any of Mummy's posts, my Tourette's, my cute little video Tourette's, recipes, anecdotes, political ranting, banner announcements, any of those things. Every time you share one of those with all of your Facebook friends, your name is written on a ticket, and that ticket goes into our wonderful giant drum here, not here in La Crosse, but in the studios in New York. And then at the end of the month, we select a name at random for a Sybil prize from the Zazzle.com company. We've had past winners who've gotten and I want you to vote T-shirt and the wonderful the pink pagoda, not pink pagoda, by the way, Jack Pagoda photograph coffee cup. We've had wonderful winners, and I'd like you to know that every time your name goes in, it increases your chances of winning. So every time you share, your name goes in, and the more shares you do, the better your chances of winning. Our next drawing is just a week away, about it'll be on July 31st. I just got a message saying, what is the phone number again? 323-784-9639. What else can I tell you? Oh, by the way, I'm doing Friday shows at Cherries on the Bay, Cherry Grove, Fire Island at Forge. It's the Smarty Pants Trivia Challenge with Professor Budinski. I want to say a big hello to Jackie and Kevin and Will there and all of the boys and girls that work there. I love you all. And of course, Uncle Johnny is my, Uncle Johnny Poole is my bartender there, the best pina coladas in the universe. That's Cherries on the Bay, Cherry Grove, Four-ish every Friday for the Smarty Pants Trivia Challenge. And I'm also writing for Shoshana McCollum at the Fire Island News, and that's on Fire Island. That paper goes all over the South Shore of Long Island and to all 17 towns on Fire Island. Please, if you can't get a copy, if you can't get a paper copy, run, do not walk to their fireislandnews.com site, and you can download their papers and see Mummy's column and Johnny Burke's column and everything. So that's the fireislandnews.com. Okay, so those are the announcements out of the way. Tonight I mentioned that, you know, with the dog days of summer approaching and the heat wave and the storms and all of the different, oh my God, cataclysms. For instance, right now in La Crosse, it feels like it's 98 degrees outside. We're near the Arctic Circle and people are suffocating here. And yet they also suffer with 9 months of winter. So when it's summer, it's deadly. And then, you know, October 1st, the snow begins piling up or whatever. These people are very hardy. I mentioned in my coming attractions for tonight's show that friends and family, so many people are writing in to me and saying that their friends and family are becoming foes and fussers and freaks and, well, effers, I won't use the word, but the F asterisk C-K-E-R-S. People are at odds with their families and have been so now. Well, they were back when George Bush was president. And then they went, the other halves of the families were at war with about Obama's presidency. And now it's gone absolutely haywire. Families are literally splitting apart the way they did during the Civil War. People are literally shooting each other. And I want to invite you to call in tonight or to even text me, private message me on Facebook, and give us your outlook. I'd rather have you call in and give us your advice on how you deal with family members. Look, let's be honest. Let's call a spade a spade. For thousands of years and cross-culturally, families have been at odds with each other, generationally usually, geographically as well. Flower drum song, you had the whole thing about the generations of the Chinese in San Francisco being at odds with each other. This is a cliche, a theatrical and a cinematic cliche, that children are always at war with their parents. You know, Bye Bye Birdie, that was built on the whole generational thing. But now it's become so toxic. People are absolutely at war with their family members over politics, over gender identification, over sexual orientation. It's the end of the world, it seems like. Families are being riven at a time when half the country is raving and proselytizing about family, so-called family values. What do you do? I could tell you endless stories, but I think that's boring. I think I'm going to invite other people to call in. I have been at odds with members of my family for years. I've told you anecdotes about my own mother being a brilliant, charismatic, hysterically funny, dazzling, seductive psychopath. Not unlike Joan Crawford. With a little bit less of the staginess, perhaps. And she never chopped rose bushes down, although she did other things that would certainly be arrestable. She would be arrested today if she raised her children in the climate that we now live in. Someone would have reported her to a social worker or to a city agency. But my mother was an extraordinarily charismatic person, and she delighted and amazed me until I was about 14, and I began to see the man behind the curtain. I began to see the creature that was pulling the levers and curtains and turning the knobs on that Frankenstein board and was pretending to be the Wizard of Oz and in fact was a dangerous woman. it didn't dissuade me from still seeing her gifts. And 90% of the things that you people think are so charming about me or funny or interesting or whatever, the best qualities of me are my mother's, tragically. And I have tried to distract myself from being seduced into the bad qualities of my mother. The things that many of you don't like about me are not my mother's. They are my own, and I must own them myself and be responsible for my foibles and my character flaws. So my mother's flaws are not mine, but my mother's triumphs are now mine. So I owe her the good stuff, and I must take responsibility for the bad stuff. And there you have it. Having said that, the rest of my family, I have been at odds with various members of my family, and indeed have not spoken to one of my own brothers in 25 years, and have not spoken to him because he is in thrall to Sarah Palin and Joe the Plumber and George Bush, and I don't even know where he stands on Donald Trump. I assume that he worships Donald Trump and the NRA and the KKK and all sorts of things, Breitbart and whatever. So we have not spoken, and that is unfortunate, but necessary, because I just can't. Oh, I can't make small talk with everyone, darlings. I try to make small talk with all sorts of people during the week, but that's too extreme for me. That I can't discuss things with people who think the earth is flat, that climate change is either non-existent or is the result of moss exhaling or salamanders farting or whatever. I don't know what the 13th century notions are anymore. I can't participate in people who think that women should be barefoot and have 27 children until they miscarry on the 28th. And by the way, girls, and I'm addressing girls right now, girlfriends, I must tell you, I won't tolerate that kind of attitude from women either. If you're going to collaborate with your own oppressors, then screw you. You deserve every possible abuse that befalls you. I'm sorry. If you're going to date your 15th wife beater and then report to the police that, you know, this 15th person has broken your arm, you're an idiot. You definitely have no radar whatsoever, and you're obviously invested in destruction. The number of women in the Midwest right now who are voting against their own reproductive rights, their own bodies. I don't know where you're from. I don't know what planet you're from. I don't know if perhaps you're concealing penises and in fact you don't have vaginas. I don't know what conspiracy is going on. I don't know if you've slept with pods from other planets and Kevin McCarthy hasn't run to your town yet and said, beware, beware, they're coming. I don't know what's going on with women today. But if you're a woman who is conspiring with Donald Trump and the rest of that gang, Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan, I'm sorry for you, and I can't know you. I can't know you. I can't have that kind of toxicity in my life. I'm too old and too fragile to have that kind of nightmare in my life. So back to the family thing, though. I'm hoping that we're going to have someone call in and give us some advice on, I know Wayne Johnson is part of it. Why doesn't Wayne Johnson call in and talk about our subject tonight? I think he'd be marvelous. Don't you, Gwendolyn?
Well, I do, but I think that Wayne is with his grandbabies tonight.
Oh, all right. Well, but I, for instance, Elaine Zenna, where's Elaine Zenna tonight? Or where is Jan? I want someone to call in tonight, and maybe Kim is so sunny and lovely, though. She's probably never spoken a crossword to a family member in her life. But Jan, oh, I can see Jan pushing an Aunt Ethel down the staircase in a wheelchair, just like Richard Widmark. Oh, that would be marvelous. I love thinking of Jan Blazer as maybe pushing an unwanted relative down a spiral staircase in a wheelchair. Or on a gurney. That would be even more wonderful. On a hospital gurney. Oh, what fun. I could dispose of someone. I could dispose of my brother that way and not bat an eye. I think, as a matter of fact, I should probably run to the bottom of the staircase, put him back on the gurney, put him back in the elevator, and take him all the way up to the 12th floor again and push him down again. That would be great fun. I know that my sister would find that vastly amusing. I don't have any phone calls yet, I don't think, unless our switchboard is screwed up. Gwendolyn, have you had a falling out with a family member?
Well, I did actually, after my mother crossed, my sister and I had a few entanglements, but we mended those. You know, we're very much, we have the same thought strains. We have the same spiritual direction and political direction. Oof, yes.
How lucky. Now, see, you're very lucky for that. You're very lucky to have, you know, have those similarities, because I am literally at the opposite end of the spectrum with my brother and with my mother. Towards the end of her life, she became a strange creature, with apparently without a blow to the head, or without too much club aluminum in her kitchen. I don't know what happened, but my mother definitely wandered to a different part of the metaphysical universe. In the last 5 years of her life, so much so that she completely alienated my stepfather, who I had been at odds with for many years. And my father and I, stepfather and I, became very close and stood amazed with my sister at my mother's evolution into this this strange member of the Spanish Inquisition. It was so weird where she went after a lifetime of intellectual pursuits and curiosity, and she became such a stilted creature. At the end of her life, which was cancer, sadly, I had actually approached a local medical university about doing an autopsy on her, but my brother, who was steeped in extremist religious fanaticism at that point, said at the funeral that if we had cut her open, we might damage her soul. And there was all sorts of gourd rattling and strange howling at the moon and everything over her funeral in the name of Christian dogma or something. And I personally wanted to have her sawn open by anyone, just to see first of all, to count how many rings were there, and then also to see what might be occupying her brain. Was it indeed mad cow disease? Was it a sliver that she had received in shop class as the only girl at Beverly High? What exactly had happened to her to cause this transformation? It wasn't Alzheimer's, but it was Alzheimer's of the soul almost. It wasn't Alzheimer's of her intellect. Her brain was wonderful. It was just that her spirit had become so tainted and chipped up like an old China teacup in the back of a cabinet. It was like, oh my goodness, that's all that's left of her spirit and her soul. It was just bizarre. So I don't know what to think. I know that I have tried to help other friends who are at odds. I would say 90% of my friends at this point in my life and my acquaintances are at odds with some family member or another. It seems to be the cliche. When I was growing up, the cliche was that you'd go to a dinner or a party or something, and people would talk about their families, and they would say, oh yes, you know, we have one of those in our family. And what they meant back then was you had a gay child or a lesbian child in the family, and you know, or a relative, an old Aunt Agnes who had revealed herself to be, after 40 years of being a gym teacher, living with a single woman who was an accountant in the bank. They turned out to be lesbians, and they wouldn't say lesbian. They would just say, oh yes, we have one of those in our family. Now you have a religious ultra-right neo-fascist, one of those in a family. And there's not one family I can think of practically now that doesn't have one of those. Friends of mine, we can list them. People get together at dinner parties and compare notes on them and tell jokes about them, write comedy material on them. So I'm curious as to what people are doing about this in their own homes. What do people, how do you deal with it? What do you say? Do you avoid them? Do you do what I'm doing with my brother, which is simply not speak to them anymore, which is tragic, I think. That's a tragic thing to do. You know, it's definitely a character flaw on my own part that I'm not reaching out to him. But the vitriol that was the last exposure that I had from him, and what he exposed my sister to, the vitriolic comments, are just, how do you win? So I'm no Mahatma Gandhi. I am no Mahatma Gandhi. I just can't stand at the Amritsar courtyard and let people machine gun me down. I can't do it. I believe in putting up a fight, and I'm not evolved enough not to swat a mosquito. I'm not evolved enough to forgive my worst enemies and to invite them in conversation. I just can't. So I admit that openly and apologetically to everybody. I can't do it. But maybe someone could convince me of how to do it.
But there is a lot of that going around right now, probably because of all the politics. But
yeah.
There is a whole bunch. And I've been with a group of activists and bloggers for a number of years before Obama ever came onto the set. We were sort of, uber lefty crowd, if you will. And even in that crowd right now, there's a lot of bickering and division. And, if you think that Russia and Putin are actually doing what the intelligence community suggests, you're falling for the deep state Russiagate thing. And it's like, oh, come on now, please.
Right.
And it's causing a division, but when you talk about family, there is that going on too. And I've actually even noticed it in Facebook on my page with other friends and such, posting, I can't believe my mother said this, or I can't believe, and I'm not talking about a bunch of gay people or lesbians or any. I'm talking about people who are, contemporary to my age, a little younger, or a couple even millennials who are saying, I can't believe my parents would say such a thing
right.
about my friend or about my Democrat friend or this kind of thing. So it's a sign of the times. It's a culling of the herd, if you will.
Well, it's interesting because, the All in the Family comedy series dates back to the 70s. And, Archie Bunker and that whole, that program is suddenly fresh again. It's so interesting how that should just be brought forward, because Archie Bunker is the Donald Trump supporter set back in the 70s. I, of course, was already satirizing Donald Trump and Rudy Giuliani back in the 80s, long before either of them had made any overtures about being a president or whatever. I invented, at the Palladium, as a matter of fact, I invented something called the Rudy Awards. And it wasn't named after Rudy Giuliani. They were Rudy because they were awards that acknowledged breaches of good taste and etiquette, and they were for outstanding acts of rudeness. And the first winners in different the categories were, there were wonderful categories. There were trophies, and there was a huge presentation in the Palladium back when it had its heyday. And we had performers, and we had just like an Oscar show. We had performers come out and do numbers, and then we had another person come up with an envelope and read the nominees, and then the winner would be. And then we, of course, Rudy Giuliani and Donald Trump and Leona Helmsley weren't there to collect their awards. So we had wonderful downtown celebrities like Michael McQuarrie and Joey Arias accepted the awards in the name of someone else. Evelyn Blair, John Lewis, different people accepted the awards. Joni Baker came. So what was wonderful was that the awards covered categories. One of the categories was mistreating middle class and working class people. The nominees are, and the winner, of course, was at that time Leona Helmsley for the Helmsley Palace scandals on how she was treating all of the cleaning and support staff at the Helmsley Palace, even though her ad campaign was about if I wouldn't stay here, why would you? Meaning the Helmsley Palace, and she was portraying herself as the Marie Antoinette of the Helmsley Palace, and indeed she was. Donald Trump won for screwing creditors in Atlantic City again, or screwing the Plasterers and Painters Union, whatever it is, his crime du jour back then. Rudy Giuliani won for harassing hot dog cart salesmen on the sidewalks. It was a great thing. And the Rudy Award itself, were the trophy was a hand grenade, which we had picked up surplus hand grenades that had been defused at the Army and Navy surplus store on 42nd Street, and then mounted them on a beautiful Lucite stand that had a base that was a five-pointed star, a Lucite star that was very chic. And we had spray-painted them silver chrome. We had chrome-plated them. And so they were that was the Rudy Award, was a hand grenade on a Lucite star. It's so funny how the world has evolved, how we were already noticing these problems back in the 70s and 80s, and here we are 30 years later, and the dystopian, who would have thought? Carol O'Connor would have shrieked with laughter if we told him that Donald Trump would be the president someday, or that Rudy Giuliani would be advising him on the wisdom of his career. It would be, no one would have believed it possible, you know?
And you know, it's funny, Mommy, because basically one of the things that really it can get to them in a very personal way, and you've seen our president act this way when it happens to him, is using a sense of humor. I once witnessed Betsy Bloomingdale purposely spill a drink in front of Leona Helmsley at her own place and put the glass up and then go over to her, "I'm supposed to clean this up." And it was hysterical. Everybody turned around to watch because she was saying, "Aren't you the help? Aren't you the one who makes sure this is going to be cleaned?" I mean, it really was freaking funny. It was a sense of humor. And what it did was showed the world standing around just exactly what she was portraying herself as, you know?
Yeah.
And to the point, when you do something like that to Donald Trump, which has been done to him by many people many times, he gets, why do you think he's such an angry SOB? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Nice people don't like him.
Yeah.
Don't like them.
You know, it's
humor.
They've changed. I was watching the special on Broadway, Broadway musicals, and talking about the Jewish influence, the enormous Jewish influence on Broadway theater from the very start, from vaudeville days on up through the development of the Great American Songbook, Tin Pan Alley, the giants, Gershwin, Berlin, Lerner and Lowe, Hammerstein and Rogers, all of just the giants. I mean, I think Cole Porter was the only non-Jew among them, basically. And the Jewish influence on Broadway. And they were talking about cabaret. And one of the heartbreaks for me about the movie, I'm not a big fan of the movie, because they edited out the wonderful grocer and the German landlady, Sally Bowles' German landlady, Fräulein Schultz or Herr Schultz and whatever it is. I can't remember their names. But the grocer falls in love with the landlady. The landlady is a German, and he is a German Jew, and they have a wonderful romance, and they're middle-aged, and they're not sure that they would ever have fallen in love at that time in their lives, and here they are falling in love as Germany disintegrates, and of course, as Germany disintegrates, their relationship disintegrates because it becomes too dangerous. And I was marveling at how sophisticated the play was, with that added dimension to it, and watching how this sweet romance between these hardworking, impoverished Germans unravels, as does the rest of the play. Sally Bowles' relationship with Cliff, unravels because they're being torn apart by the politics. And I wish the movie had been more loyal to that and less loyal to the fact that Judy Garland's daughter was the star. You know, it was like, it was so much about Judy Garland's daughter, Liza Minnelli, the great Liza Minnelli is playing Sally Bowles. I always thought that was so ironic, because if Sally Bowles in fact sang that well in that Fleabag cabaret, that basement loser cabaret, with people starving to death, you know, and people eating rats and people being prostitutes in the back alley. If Sally Bowles was that great a singer and a performer, she would have been in Hollywood in 1931. She would not be singing in that forlorn place. That's why Jill Haworth, the original Sally Bowles, was so much better, because she in fact sounded like a starving sparrow when she sang, you know, Don't Tell Mama and all of those different songs. But the bottom line of my dissertation on this was that that musical, people see that musical, either the movie or the play, and they think, oh, it can't happen here, or things don't unravel, things don't become dangerous, and it's like they do. It's, we live in a fool's paradise if we're not being watchful. We've got to be watchful. I'm getting messages from people. I wish they would call in. I'm getting all of this messaging on my Facebook page right now. One of the things that I'm seeing is a notice. Oh, from, this is wonderful. This is from motherjones.com. Stephen Michael Russo's, hello, Stephen, darling, sent me, in some battleground states, 18 to 29-year-olds now make up a far greater percentage of new registrants than any other age group. And he goes on to say, I have faith that the young people regret their apathy about the 2016 election and will rise up and sweep these people away with numbers far greater than any new zombie bodies the base can dredge up from the holiers and bayous of interest. Oh my goodness, it goes on and on. And it says, young people are registering to vote in huge numbers, new study finds. And although the right is trying to get these people to register, in fact, for every one young person registering as a Republican or as someone right wing, I'd be willing to bet that three or four are registering as progressive voters, if only because they have grown up with a gay uncle, a lesbian gym teacher, they have dated someone at 18 years of age who was another race. A white girl in Toledo, Ohio, dated a black kid in junior high school. And it didn't cause, it wasn't the end of the world. And a Hindu boy came to a school in La Crosse and was able to explain, no, he was not Islamic, to listening students who were open to the fact that he was, in fact, from a different country and a different religion. It's like the old saying, which is quoted in Angels in America, but it's an old saying, the world, in fact, only spins forward. It does not spin backwards. And it is, to me, whenever I feel despondent about Donald Trump or the George Bush or Mitch McConnell, or the fact that Kentucky would be enthralled to someone like Mitch McConnell, each of these people and their horrifying agendas, whenever I become despondent, I have to remember that change is inevitable and inexorable. As surely as the snow will fall in December, the flowers, some flowers, will come back in the spring, which is why I have my garden in the island, which is why I do those tourettes. The renewal of things, it may not be quite the renewal we're hoping for in all the ways we hope, but it is inexorable. These children, these young people have seen other races and are intrigued by them. And they do not think it's weird to date, a white kid does not think it's weird to date a black kid. And that's the state of the 21st century. It was not the state of the 19th century. And it wasn't the state of the first half of the 20th century. But something began to give. And it is inexorable. Just as water, drip by drip, will erode the Himalayas will be turned into sand by just water dripping. It will take a time. It will take a long time, but it will happen. The mightiest mountain falls under the smallest dripping water. And these sad notions of prejudice, of bigotry, this sad desire to thrust women back into the kitchen and to make them have babies. By the way, people forcing people to have babies, and they don't have any intention of taking care of them. So you must have your child to full term, even if you're a victim of rape. But then when your child is born, yeah, nobody cares. You give it to a crack addict to raise, or you could, because it's a family member, the almighty family thing going on with these conservative judges. Well, we try to keep the family together. Why? Why would you do that? The mother is an OxyContin addict. Why would you thrust an innocent child back into the arms of a drug addict? Who, by the way, has been made a drug addict by corporate America, by Big Pharma. So you've got this incredible conspiracy by this neo-fascist mega corporation world to kill people's pain. It's right out of Brave New World, Soma. The drug in Brave New World was called Soma. And everyone gets their dosages of Soma to make them feel nice, to make them feel placid, to make them bovine. Well, unfortunately, we've seen what OxyContin and the rest of those drugs have done. They have not made people placid. They have not made people bovine. They have ruined people. Drugs are no longer the scourge of the slums and black people, which is what white people used to say. Heroin, it's a nigger drug. That's what they used to say. It's ridiculous, ridiculous. Heroin is a suburban drug in Staten Island now. The number of white kids who are dying from heroin is electrifying. And here's this whole prejudice that it was only, what's the line in Godfather, that wonderful scene in Godfather where Louis Gus is one of the family heads, and he says, we can deal drugs, we'll just keep it in the slums. They'll keep it, as he says, to the dark people. They have no souls, let them ruin themselves. It was idiotic. What an appalling notion. And backed by the government and enabled by big pharma corporations. And it's like, yeah, it ruined minority people, and then it trailed everywhere else. It went everywhere. Like AIDS. They originally thought it was a gay disease. Look, it infected the blood banks of the country. And what about bisexual people? What about people who accidentally, pricked their fingers? People got AIDS. And this was the Reagan lie, the lie by that whole group of people. Well, it's a fag disease. It won't spread. And then when it was spreading to minorities like the African Americans and Hispanic, well, it's a brown people's disease. Well, until it finally reached into hemophiliacs. And to people who got blood transfusions, it went everywhere. It went everywhere. This whole embracing of bigotry and small-mindedness and hoping that it's going to kill the other but not me, well, that stuff won't come into my house. I love it. Dick Cheney's daughter is a lesbian. Screw you, Dick, and your Halliburton hellhole. Your daughter's a lesbian. What are you going to do about that? And Newt Gingrich, doesn't he have someone who's gay in his family? They all do. They all do. Half of those senators that are pounding their fists about family values are being caught in men's rooms in airports, playing their little toe tap game with their foot under the bathroom stall. They're all being caught. The more someone pounds their fist on a table, my only regret is that Jesse Helms, almighty Jesse Helms, wasn't caught in some Motel 6 with six black underage prostitutes so that we could finally know exactly what he was all about. He got away clean. He died clean. But my God, the whole, remember Oral Roberts and Jimmy Swaggart and, oh my God, Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker. I have sinned. Well, boo-hoo. The more they pound their fists on what you shouldn't do, it's more likely that they are doing it. Roy Cohn, J. Edgar Hoover, and Joe McCarthy. The holy three, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Ghost of bigotry in this country. J. Edgar Hoover, Roy Cohn, and Joe McCarthy, all of them with so much baggage, so much ice under the water of their iceberg. It's like, it's just, it's shocking, shocking. And this is what we are enthralled to. We still are enthralled to this. Obviously Putin has got something on Donald Trump. I just wish the Super 8 film would be released, you know, or whatever. What were you going to say, Gwendolyn?
Well, I was going to say, but you're quite right. The young people today, my nephew's age and all the way down into high school, those high school kids from Parkland down here are traveling across the country, and they are signing up kids to register to vote. It's just and they're going backwards and everything, and they're doing a superlative job. And the thing is that you're right. Most kids today have grown up with an uncle who's gay, an aunt who's a lesbian, they hear the stories. And, you know, my mother used to be, and my mother lived with a gay cadre, but she used to have a very nice saying that was, what was it? Light in the loafers. That was it. He's a little light in his loafers.
Right.
Now, these kids know better, and they're what the world is going to be. And backing them up is the most important thing we can do right now.
I'm thrilled that they are taking, for the most part, again, you can find one who is going to, you know, believe that Darwin was, you know, the son of Satan. But for the most part, these kids believe in climate change. They believe that climate change is real. They believe that it is man-made. The ones that believe it's real, you might find one that believes it's real, but that it's, quote-unquote, a natural occurrence in the planet's evolution. Most of them who believe in climate change believe that this is a man-made phenomenon and that it is very, very sudden onset, that this is changing quickly and that they are going to have to live with the consequences of it. And I'm that alone is a step forward. That alone is a step forward because they cannot continue to adhere to the benighted choices that Mitch McConnell and Paul Ryan and the Koch brothers, whatever their names are, Donald Trump, George Bush, they cannot adhere to those choices and have the climate be okay in their time, you know, and in their children's time, if they're choosing to have children. I don't know how people have an infant in a baby stroller right now. I'm filled with terror when I see children like that. What were you going to say?
I was going to tell you, you do have a caller. I'm going to open up the line.
Oh, great.
Area code 916 up in your
chat. Oh. Hello.
Hi,
Richard. Richard?
It is Richard, indeed.
How are you?
When the primetime news comes on, you know what I do?
What?
I watch the Jack Benny show.
And that's wonderful.
The primetime news was out here on the West Coast, and you've got Al Roker talking about his sharding at the White House. And anyway, that was years ago. But anyway, all this crap. And so I watched the Jack Benny show, and tonight we watched Eddie Rochester Anderson, and we watched Jack Benny, we watched Mary Livingston, and we watched Isaac Stern make an appearance on the Jack Benny show.
My
and
God, he must have been a kid.
That lifted my spirits.
That's really nice. But
now, where else in primetime television, the year of 19, whatever, mid-50s maybe,
right.
CBS Television City in Hollywood being filmed, primetime television, where in today's world, in primetime network television, would you hear something called Vinyovsky Polonaise Brilliant for violin and piano?
And Richard, who would listen to it? I mean, the crowd out in the world now is like, you know,
the Massenet Meditation, you know, by Massenet. I mean, these are things that was on. Remember the Bell Telephone Hour?
Of course. Of course.
With Donald Voorhees from Allentown, Pennsylvania. I mean, that went on. That was on prime time. It went from the radio to television. Bell Telephone would say, due to the content of the program, Bell Telephone will have limited interruptions until the end of the program. So they didn't even break in for commercials until the end.
Isn't that wonderful? A different age.
You'd hear major symphony orchestras. You'd hear great artists, and I mean, it was quality television.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So I choose to watch that vintage television, even though, I mean, look, it was, you know, the 50s and 60s, there was some ugly history going on. I mean, there's always ugly things going on in no matter what decade it is. But things weren't, I don't know, there's a double side, it's a double-sided coin. I mean, in the 50s and 60s, people had to live in the closet. People couldn't be themselves.
Exactly.
We had the Leave It to Beaver era that just exploded into Woodstock and all this kind of thing. And but on the other hand, so you know, and you can say that about today. But on the other hand, you know, everything goes today. Everybody's out to get one another. We don't live in a pretty time. You know, in those days, it was romance when Andy Hardy kissed Polly Benedict on the cheek.
Right.
That was romance.
Yep.
Today, that kind of thing. I mean, went on behind the scenes. That's a whole other story. But when people went to the movie theaters, that was romance. But of course, then you can say, on the other hand, when the Nicholas Brothers were in The Pirate with Gene Kelly, and The Pirate played in the South, they cut the Nicholas Brothers out because they wouldn't have black people on the screen in the South in the white movie theater. Same, you know, with the Nicholas Brothers. They had to appear – they couldn't be a part of the plot because they had to be able to cut them out when the films played in the South.
Exactly. Well, and I remember distinctly, Guess Who's Coming to Dinner was banned from whole sections of the South because it was considered degenerate. The movie was considered
yes. –
an absolute sign of Satanism, of degeneracy, and of a communist takeover of the United States by Hollywood, and that is back in 1968. We also had assassinations back then, and then, as you mentioned, the 40s and 50s. In the 50s, we had the movie, or the late 40s, Gentleman's Agreement, which was, you know, an incredible indictment of anti-Semitism.
Absolutely.
So,
very important.
Listen, you called late, so I want to get a quick answer from you. Have you ever, apropos of not speaking to a family member over issues, not over borrowing money, but over issues, external issues, have you ever had a situation like that in your family?
Absolutely.
And do you want to elucidate on that?
I think the problem is when, as creative spirits as we are, as talent, you know, when God gives you a talent that you develop and it's nurtured and all of that, whether it's writing or you're in the arts, you know, you have a different life. It's not the ordinary kind of life. It's not the lawyer life. It's not the going to work in a cubicle from 8 to 5 kind of life. And when you go into a family that your other siblings don't understand what a creative spirit is, and then the creative spirit gets attention for what they're doing, that can create a lot of problems.
Very much so. Very much so. There can be envy and stuff like that.
They don't understand. All they understand, and most people, all they understand is the gosh darn almighty dollar. And
yes.
Success is defined by money, which is the biggest bunch of BS it's just bullvine feces.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely.
Success is defined by money. That's it. It's just not true. I mean, you know, people today, you know, they couldn't listen to a Chopin Nocturne or look at a great work of art or go into nature, as you talk about so eloquently when you talk about your garden and nurturing and and go be nice to people and enjoy the plants and walk and smell the – people don't know – most of America didn't even know what the hell you're talking about.
Which is why I decided to give up show business and to become a nun, I have become, I've decided to go and become a nun, a very well-accessorized one, you understand, and one that enjoys fine food. I won't deprive myself, but I have decided to shut myself away and just have caviar.
We have to protect ourselves. We have to protect ourselves because you cannot let society take away your sensitivity and your goodness and your love of beauty and nature. We cannot let society take that away from us.
I mentioned it last week, that one of the greatest lessons we can teach a child from infancy, literally from the minute they open their eyes, is that they should be true to themselves and be brave in the things that they are, and to only invite people in their lives who support that, support the specialness and the magic that child has, and do not ever tell that child that they should be Beyonce or Madonna or Streisand or anyone else. It's like, if you're going to tell your child to be anyone, tell them to be Eleanor Roosevelt. It's, you know, darling, don't worry about the fact that you've got buck teeth. You grow up to be Eleanor Roosevelt, you'll be just fine. People will, the millions, will think you're gorgeous.
But for the most part,
we need children to feel that they are lucky because everyone else is taken. You may as well be yourself because everyone else is taken. And there are so many people like you, Richard, and me, and other creative people who are in families of aluminum siding salesmen. And I bless them. I bless them. It's wonderful to sell aluminum siding, but that is not the be-all and then the end-all of the world either, any more than me doing this broadcast is curing cancer. I would love to be a person who cures cancer. I do not make it out that being Sybil Brunchen is better than being an aluminum siding salesman. But on the other hand, I don't think that being an aluminum siding salesman is better than being Sybil Brunchen.
Interesting.
Dead silence.
When you're in the arts, though, the thing is, we pay a price for sensitivity. There's a very deep price that's paid for talent and paid for sensitivity. And talent is synonymous, I think, with sensitivity and passion and the pursuit of excellence. That's really what defines what talent is.
The
pursuit of excellence, because you have to develop that talent. And it's about
communication. You're absolutely right.
And it's about communication. And when you can communicate to a public on a very high level, whether it be in words or in musical phrases or in plays or whatever it is, and make an audience forget about their problems for a couple of hours, what is more incredible than that?
I agree.
I mean,
as Jack
Lemmon
said about acting, he said acting takes a terrible beating, but it is a noble profession in what it accomplishes. And I think that you're right about all of that. All of the arts do that. All of them.
Absolutely. I mean, when somebody tells me that I've had several, at least a half a dozen people tell me that they've played my music for their loved ones when they were dying.
Yes.
So, I mean, how more powerful can that be?
It's uplifting and humbling both.
When you move somebody, it makes everything worthwhile. It makes the suffering worthwhile because you've made a difference and you've communicated a part of yourself to someone else. And there's something very sacred and very special about that. I mean, you talk about this all the time. I mean, this is what you preach. This is who you are.
Yeah.
So this is you're such an articulate, sensitive, brilliant person.
Well, thank you. And I'm sure that Richard, my other three listeners agree with you.
Well,
Jan, and Gwendolyn, you make up my fan club, and I'm deeply honored to have the three of you.
We adore. We appreciate your presence. I can tell.
And I appreciate you too.
People are not. People are kind of like they're. I don't know. I don't have the answers. I wish I did, but I don't. Go with the truth. Go with your passion. Go like with the children, you know. But you see, today we live in a society where the parents, they got to keep up with the Joneses. They both have to work to make enough money. No, everybody's tired. Nobody has enough time. Everybody's in a hurry. The technology, the phones, the so nobody has time to enjoy the garden. Like
and Richard.
Nobody has time
Richard,
to enjoy the garden.
Richard, sadly, we don't have time to continue this conversation. I'm out of time completely.
Oh, shucks.
I want to thank you for calling in.
It's a pleasure.
And thank you so much. Give my love to Jan.
You've got two of your biggest fans are right here.
Thank you so much, honey. I thank you for calling in.
Okay. Bye.
Folks, good night. I'm going to remind all of you that we'll be on next Monday at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock.
I also want to remind you, I'm echoing there for some reason, I want to remind you that our sponsor tonight was DaughtersOfIsis.com, the fragrant memories of our ancestors. Do tune in next week at 8 o'clock on Monday. That's 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And if you missed our show tonight, or friends of yours did, just click on the link. It will take you there again. Have a good night. Good night, everybody.
I was going to say, and everybody who goes into a creative lifestyle in life should be required to go watch Man of La Mancha. Made a big difference in my life. At a time when I really needed to hear it. You never walk alone. So now I can listen to the rest of mine.
And Mars is part of the whole thing, and
it
involves Leo and Aquarius, which are where the North and South Node are, respectively. And so the eclipse is going to be conjunct the South Node, which has to do with the past and past lives and our old patterns and where we've been, and Mars is retrograde in that area, and Mars is in retreat, and Mars is regrouping, and Mars is frustrated even maybe, and going backwards and going over the same ground again, but in the sign of the new. So there's a lot of contradictory and complex energy involved in this situation. And I think this is a really powerful preparation week for what's about to transpire. I think we're about to be disabused of something pretty major in our lives. I think of the lunar eclipse as the energy of the dark goddess. It's called the blood moon. I mean, that's what we call it now. I think it was originally an evangelical Christian idea, but we've sort of reclaimed that.
Of course you have, darling. Hello?
Call you on the other line.
No. I was playing a video.
Oh, I made a huge mistake. I shouldn't have stuck on the topic. I kept thinking that it would seduce people into calling, and I would have gone back to the. I wanted to talk about the blood moon. I wanted to talk about the fact that in my garden, every night the moon rises over my garden to the south, and Jupiter and Mars and Venus and Mercury have been making an unbelievable appearance.
Oh,
and
must
Jupiter
be
is
wonderful.
The size of Venus. It's huge.
Oh, yeah.
Sorry, what?
Oh, yeah. It's really huge. And they found 12 new moons around it. Did you know?
Yes. Jupiter is yellow and gigantic like Venus. People have been looking at it out on the beach on Fire Island and saying, that's not Venus, isn't it? I'm saying, no, it's yellow. That is Jupiter. It's so large and so close to the Earth right now. It just, it's like amazing what it looks like. It's huge.
It
dwarfs Mars completely. And because it's yellowish, people keep saying, well, it must be Mars. And then I'll point to Mars, which is, you know, has moved away, has moved off, and it's, you know, red and fainter. But for a while there, Jupiter, Mars, Venus, and Mercury were all as clear as could be. You could see them in the night sky. I'm telling you, it was gorgeous. Yeah, but I was going to discuss that. I was going to discuss my garden because so many people, you know, I post a video of my garden or even just a photograph, and I get 250 likes.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
You know, 100 comments, and I was going to address that. But I thought I would try and trust the topic tonight.
To lead in,
no
yeah.
One called in.
The lead in, yeah, I guess you. Well, we have to get it out there. Maybe we should do a little a little PR meme that to put out on Mondays during the day, call in and talk with Sybil tonight kind of thing.
Facebook page, all the pages and everything, and not just the Don't Come Down, Don't Sell page, but on my two Sybil Brunson pages, people do not call in. It's like there's something going on, but the, I don't know. Anyway, maybe we need to keep it lighter. Maybe I do need to ignore the topics like that and really keep it a poem, a funny anecdote, a gardening tip, and just go for the mindless stuff. I mean, I don't know what to do. When Richard called in, I was both thrilled and horrified because he called in so late that I knew he was gonna trail over. And it amazed me. He's wonderful in many ways, but it amazed me that he had no sense of the time. And see, when he called in, that he and Jan, that Jan wasn't in the other room going, Richard, he's got 68 seconds left on the show. Shut up.
I know you usually do that. I tried to give you a little heads up.
I know.
What do you call it? Next time I'll give you the 5-minute mark. But
well, I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to get some sound effects, and I'm going to have like an NBC chime here or something. And what I'll do is at the 5-minute mark, I'm going to ring that chime, and I'm going to say, oh. Folks, that's a sign that we have only a few minutes left in our show, and I'll use this audio cue like that. That will be something that will allow us to,
That's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
And very retro. It'll be kind of retro and fun, like to have an NBC chime thing come in. But when Richard called, I was so glad, but I knew that he was not going to watch the time, and he was not going to acknowledge the fact that, I've got 60 seconds left to say all the things I wanted to, like Daughters of Isis and everything else.
But then there's Fire Island News and all the places you're at, and yeah, I know.
Well, I managed to do it at the beginning, and I tried to do it at the beginning and at the end just to make sure that people get it again, but it's fine.
It is. And how is George getting along?
I'm sorry, what?
How is George getting along?
George is feeling better and better each day.
Great.
Every day he's feeling better. But, we have little slipbacks. He'll suddenly have a little bit of stress. He'll start having some chest twinges, and we worry. But he's been basically incredible on his diet and incredible on being not overexerting himself. So we're doing it. We're getting it done.
Good. But
I'm required to travel with him. That's the thing. He can't travel alone. So he's not allowed to be on the plane alone or, in a hotel room, without having me there so that, he can feel secure that if anything were to happen, I would be right there with him.
Well, that's, so you're getting a little, you're getting a travelogue in for the summer.
Yes.
We're
going to Venice, Italy, and Paris, France, Coastal across Wisconsin, but whatever.
Well, there's something everywhere, but here's the
Absolutely.
Thing. I wanted to tell you, I posted your walk through your garden on my page. It's just beautiful.
Thank you.
I really appreciated it. You do such a lovely job with the flowers. You really do need to be harvesting some of those and making some essences.
Yes. It takes a lot of pounds of lavender to make one drop of lavender oil.
No, I'm talking about the homeopathic application. I will teach you. I'll send you a little video or something. And it's quite simple. And you have a lovely soul. You'll be able to do it and create these little homeopathic vibrational remedies. All she needs is one nice bloom that you connect with.
That's good to know. I want to learn. Thank you.
No, you're welcome. Well, enjoy your marble and glass.
Yeah, I'm going to take a bath right now in the closet bath tub. They've got this big Victorian bathtub that's been restored.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah. I'm going to do that. So.
Wow.
I'll talk to you this week, okay?
Okay. Be safe.
All right. Thank you, Gwendolyn.
Oh, you're very welcome. Take care of yourself.
I will. And you too. I love you.
I love you too. Goodbye.
Thank you for the opportunity tonight.
Oh, hey. Always.
Okay.
Night. Y'all got to be this, you know, got to do this kind of stuff when I'm on the air. I know it's just part of your fucking club, isn't it? Hello, Patch. I'm sorry your buddy isn't here to be with you, Patch. I'm sorry. We're not really so bad, buddy. No. We're not so bad. We're not so bad. Get out of there. You're making me angry. Poor little Patch. He's lonely for Bob. And doesn't look at all like the Garcias are coming home tonight. So... and have to take him out and let him. Oh, boy. Okay. You need to keep your distance and be a good dog, which really, you know, I'm not holding any energy for it.